I'm Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall, and this is Midday. Today, it's our annual Oscars preview edition of Midday at the Movies, and we're going to talk about the films and artists that have been nominated for what is arguably Hollywood's top honors, the Academy Awards, being handed out at the traditional gala presentation February 24th in Los Angeles. Two of our favorite movie mavens, Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Max Weiss, editor-in-chief and pop culture critic at Baltimore Magazine, are joining us today to size up this year's crop of Oscar nominees and consider the films and artists that didn't get the nod. And they'll take your comments and questions about the movies. And later, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us with her review of Fun Home, the new musical at Baltimore Center Stage. Midday gets underway right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Midday at the Movies. I'm Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall, and today, with the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences gearing up for their 91st annual award ceremony in L.A. later this month, we're going to talk about some of the extraordinary films and artists who've been nominated for Oscars, and some that weren't but should have been. And here with me to take stock of the contenders are two of Midday's favorite movie mavens, Jed Dietz. He's the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, which also runs the historic SNF Parkway movie theater on North Avenue. Hello, Jed. Good to see you.
Good to be here. Thanks.
And Max Weiss is with us. She's the editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine and the periodical's hardworking film and pop culture critic, who also shares her thoughts on the blog post MaxTheGirl.com and on Twitter and Instagram, at MaxTheGirl. She's also a certified critic for Rotten Tomatoes. Very impressive. Very impressive.
Well, not that impressive, really, but thank you.
An influencer. An influencer, yes.
I like it.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
And you can join the conversation in the spirit of the Oscars. What are your picks for the best films and best performances of 2018? Even if your faves didn't get the nod from the Academy, let us know. Give us a call at 410-662-8780. You can email us at midday@wypr.org or send us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. Or you can comment on WYPR's Facebook page, where you will also see that we are live streaming the conversation this afternoon. So, folks, the Oscars. I mean, you're veteran film watchers and experts in the industry. Do you get excited when it's Oscars time? I mean, is it an important event, really?
I think I used to get more excited only because the Oscar season that we now have seems to go on so much longer than it used to, and it's because of social media. It used to be that just in the sort of days, weeks leading up to the broadcast, you would start getting really pumped and excited. Now it's months in advance, and there's predictions, and there's all these different award shows, and some are on TV, and they're all live streamed on Twitter, and it just becomes a little bit of a slog. But that being said, with all of these different award shows, and I watch many of them, I love the Golden Globes, the SAG Awards, whatever, there is still something special about the Oscars that is undeniable. So, yes, I still get slightly tingly when it happens.
But, Jed, you've often pointed out that, you know, the Screen Actors, the Guild Award, the Directors, the Writers Guild Awards, you know, really carry sort of more weight in the, at least among the people who are making films and acting in them. I mean, where do the Oscars fit in that spectrum?
Well, I think Max described it correctly. I mean, I think they are the pinnacle, and for good or bad. And I think they have created underneath them, because of this behemoth show that they had created that used to be billed to have worldwide audience in the billion range. You know, they've created a whole world of awards, and the other award shows have been very smart, I think, in defining their own personality. I mean, the Golden Globes is sort of the goofy one where everybody, you know, drinks champagne and you don't know what's going to happen and who's going to show up to accept the award and all that stuff. I think the total package that the Oscars have helped create underneath them that makes Max tingly still, which is great.
I regret saying that already.
No, it's a great... I think you're right. Everybody does it. And I think one of the reasons is this crazy art form that sweeps, you know, across the spectrum artistically, from the crassest business creation to the most passionate artistic creation, is sort of expressed in these awards. So this is the moment when the whole art form gets sort of touched on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fun. And I think the Academy itself is in flux in a way that I think is right now a little chaotic, but also exciting. The doors have flung open. It's more diverse.
This is the 91st Academy Awards presentation. You'd think that they'd have this act down pat. But this year, there are some particularly thorny difficulties that they're having, including who's going to host it.
And their host kind of fell
to the side. I mean, there was a bit of a problem with Kevin Hart.
So here's what's happening. First of all, Oscar ratings are going down, and that's because TV ratings are going down across the board. We have our attentions are way too divided. So network television shows are just never going to be what they were even 5 years ago, certainly not 10 years ago. So part of all of this sort of stress that we're seeing about the Oscars is because the producers are still trying to chase those ratings from 10 years ago, and it's never going to happen. So we are seeing a lot of chaos, and I'll let Jed, you know, talk about the host situation.
Yes, one among many controversies of this year. I mean, they seem to just keep shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, it started with this idea that you had to have a category of popular movies.
I remember that.
Which, if you looked at the history of the Oscars, is like the biggest problem that doesn't need to be fixed. I mean, the biggest non-problem that doesn't need to be fixed, because the big movies get nominated all the time for Oscars.
And that would win the Oscar for the shortest lived category, I would think, yes.
Yeah, because it was in existence for 6 weeks or something.
But there is this theory that, you know, the Oscars sometimes pick films that are too esoteric for a mainstream audience, and that the really big blockbusters, the Marvel films and the like, don't get nominated. But first of all, I don't believe that, because again, my theory, and I'm sticking to it, is that the Oscar ratings are down because people don't watch TV the way they used to across the board.
Yep.
But then also, you would have a year like this year where you certainly don't need a popular film category, because of the nominated best pictures, A Star is Born, Black Panther, and Bohemian Rhapsody were all monster hits.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't need a popular film. Just make good popular films,
right,
which some of those are, and, you know, they'll get nominated.
Yep. So then they went on to this host controversy where, you know, from the beginning of the Oscars, they've always had hosts.
Yeah, a celebrity, a comedian, someone who can carry the ball through the whole show.
The classic ones have been, you know, Bob Hope and Johnny Carson for many years.
And Billy Crystal.
Sequentially, then Billy Crystal, very much in that mold. Mm-hmm. And then they went into this sort of desperate thing, you know, James Franco and Anne Hathaway.
Jimmy Kimmel was good at it.
I'm not saying people weren't good. I thought Anne Hathaway and Jimmy Kimmel were charming.
No,
James Franco and
Anne Hathaway were bad because he seemed like he was stoned. I'm not sure if he was. That might just be his. And she has that sort of like theater kid, like let's put on a show energy. And he had that really laconic stoner energy. And it didn't work.
But there's this sort of search for how to do this crazy show.
Remember Neil Patrick Harris?
That was
like, you thought he was just going to nail it. I thought they had found their host for the future, and he kind of bombed. It was like hard to watch, actually.
Well, Letterman bombed, and I think not because he wasn't Letterman. He's cool. It's just like maybe that personality just doesn't fit.
I think Oprah is funny.
Anyway, so what are they going to do?
I met the only person in the world.
Are they just going to have actors presenting and doing their little shtick for each award? Kevin Hart
was briefly going to be the host. And then they unearthed some homophobic tweets from his not-too-distant past, and he kind of never really apologized for them. He suggested that he was being, you know, he was being victimized by PC culture, blah, blah, blah. Can I tell you something? If he had apologized and done it sincerely, he would be the host of the Oscars right now, but he never did. And you know who watches the Oscars? A lot of gay people. They love the Oscars. So you cannot offend your core audience for the Oscars. So he's gone. Yeah. Right. And so now, no host, which I don't think that's going to be too big of a problem.
I think it's going to be fine. It's just one of these gyrations. The other one was they were only going to have two of the songs, the nominated songs, performed. That lasted for some short period of time when everybody got up in arms. Then they were going to destroy or you know, the old great tradition of having the previous year's winning actors in both supporting and main role present to the next year, which is sort of a lovely tradition.
But they thought that these particular actors weren't high profile right. enough, because we're talking about Allison Janney and Gary Oldman and right. Sam Rockwell. Like, these are people that I want to see, you
of
know?
Course, yeah.
And then they did an about face on that. I mean, they are scampering. They don't know what they're doing.
It's really true. So it's yeah. been...
It feels a little desperate. Yeah. It mm-hmm. really does. So yeah. I'm very curious to see how the show ends up. And I think they're actually still shortening the ceremony now, so it's going to definitely be 3 hours and not a moment longer.
I mean, we've heard that before, though.
We have heard that. Yeah. So,
And I think they try to shorten it in the worst possible way, which is to cut off the people receiving the awards. I mean, here are these moments of totally unscripted, can only be partially planned because you're in the competition right up until the name is announced. Sometimes electric competition when the wrong name is announced, as we've seen in the last couple of years. And that's the part they try to shorten. You know, they have the band play and you've got somebody crying and talking about their mother or some high school teacher who made their lives. That's the part of the show that's actually wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need less of the big production probably and less of the, you know, scripted comic stuff, which is never that funny or seldom that funny,
right.
and more of this, you know, let the art form be celebrated and out there.
It's so awkward when somebody is having an emotional moment on stage and the band starts, you know, playing them off the stage. It's cringeworthy.
A perennial tension.
It is.
Well, so let's turn, before we go to the break in a few minutes, I just wanted to put the spotlight on the films and artists that are going to be the subject of the Oscar ceremony. And let's look first at the Best Picture category. And I wanted to get your reactions to the nominees there. We've got Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, which is that wonderful film, yeah, that
by Alfonso Cuarón, yeah.
Right? A Star Is Born and Vice. What do you make of that list? There's a lot of interesting trends in there. I mean, we've seen it's a very dynamic representation of both diversity and an international flair too.
Yeah. So they expanded the list from 5 to potentially 10. Mm-hmm. A couple of years back, and I think that helped a lot. I think it was a really smart decision. I think this list, just Max said it earlier, I mean, it really sort of, I mean, you can quibble over and have serious arguments over, you know, how worthy each of these are up against other movies that you might have thought were more worthy. They didn't do 10, they only did 9 this year. But I think even this list, you look at it, and it really does give you a sense of the wide array of this art form. And I think that's what the Oscars should always be thinking mm-hmm. about.
I think there is an unusual number of mediocre films on this list, mm-hmm. as well as some great films. Like, I think A Star Is Born is a great film. Black Klansman is a great film. Green Book is a very mediocre film. Roma, I think, is a masterpiece. Black Panther is a great film. Bohemian Rhapsody is a mediocre film. The Favorite is a great film. And The Vice is a stinker.
Vice.
You don't agree.
I like Vice. Adam McKay totally fascinates me. This is the director, completely untrained in sort of normal career path. You know, Saturday Night Live writer, been a great partner with Will Ferrell, and he, you know, did The Big Short, and I think he always swings for the bleachers. Which I don't think he always gets there, but I love that he's doing that. He has a completely not academic film sort of, you know, I've never talked to him, so I don't know, you know, how much he knows about film. My guess is he probably knows a whole lot about film. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I thought he did in Vice, not only get these two amazing performances, Christian Bale, who was, to me, until I saw the movie, unimaginable as Dick Cheney,
yeah.
or Amy Adams, who I thought was unimaginable as Lynn Cheney. Not Liz, the daughter, Lynn. And yet, there they are. Brilliant, brilliant performances. And I thought the insight to the character's relationship was interesting. The thing I thought really was astonishing, and I'm not sure how much he consciously thought of this, But as we've seen politics sort of distort into a winner, you know, win only, win at any cost kind of thing, away from the classic ideological, you know, fights about how much government we should have versus the private sector and all that sort of stuff. Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld are the two main characters, mm-hmm. political figures in this movie, were really at the very beginning with Reagan. And obviously, both of them played through the George W. Bush administration. So have been a real force in this whole arc. Yeah. And I don't think it answers every question. I think it's just it's a maybe outsider's view of what's happened in our political culture.
Yeah, study in power.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a perfect movie. I thought the fake Shakespeare thing was a disaster.
Yes, thank you.
And just to let you know, apparently he's very proud of a song and dance number that he filmed
at
great length.
Oh my God,
that is not in the film.
Yeah.
And I just love that he's trying that stuff. I didn't like the Shakespeare thing, the song and dance number.
It's very gimmicky, you know, it's just constantly calling attention to itself. But I also found it like really condescending to the audience. I think the reason why I liked The Big Short was because I actually don't know
much about
the mortgage industry and, you know, how the stock market crashed. And so because I went in there not knowing much, I didn't feel like I was being talked down to and patronized. But with Vice, I really felt like if you know anything about Dick Cheney, anything about politics, it really felt so condescending. I didn't learn anything new. It seemed like a very simplistic view. And I hated all those meta flourishes. I hated the Shakespeare. I hated the credits. They run credits in the very, very early in the film as a joke. Right. It's just it actually like got on my nerves. But I will say this. I agree with you. I think Christian Bale is really excellent. And I like Sam Rockwell's George W. Bush, too. It's a bit of a, you know, parody. It's a bit over the top. But he's very talented. But I couldn't vote for Christian Bale for any of... I vote for the Broadcast Film Critics, the Critics' Choice Award. I couldn't vote for Christian Bale for Best Actor because I didn't want to vote for anybody associated with this film. But he is excellent.
He is. And you know, and he's established this reputation for really physically transforming himself and thinking of the machinist.
But even more than that, I think just to give, you know, just focus on that performance, that's true. But there's a lot of just makeup work in there that probably deserves an Oscar, too. But
And about 40 pounds.
But I think that rhythm of speech, that way to exude power by not saying very much and all that sort of stuff and I don't know, you know, all of Christian Bale's process on this, but he turned a not, you know, very interesting, charismatic guy, a purposefully uncharismatic guy in his political career, which is the part of the theme of the movie, how he maneuvered into a totally arresting character on film.
Yeah. Let's take a listen to a brief clip from Vice, and you'll
Must
hear.
Must we?
Yes, Max. I like the film.
I want you to be my VP. You're the solution to my problem.
I'm CEO of a large company. I have been Secretary of Defense. I have been Chief of Staff. The Vice Presidency is mostly a symbolic job.
Right, right. I can see how that wouldn't be enticing to you.
However, the Vice Presidency is also defined by the President. And if we were to come to a different understanding.
Uh-huh. Go on. I'm listening.
I sense that you're a kinetic leader. You make decisions based on instinct.
I am. People always said that.
Yeah. Now, maybe I can handle some of the more mundane jobs, overseeing bureaucracy, managing military, energy, foreign policy.
That sounds good.
That's a clip from Vice, a very interesting political film with Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney. And Sam Rockwell playing a hapless George Bush. Yeah. Max Weiss is the editor-in-chief and pop culture critic at Baltimore Magazine, and Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. They're both going to stay with me while we take a short break to take care of business. And when we come back, we'll continue our annual Oscars preview. And we invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. We'll be right back.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday at the Movies. I'm Rob Sivek, sitting in for Tom Hall. A quick word about tomorrow's program. It'll be another edition of the Friday News Wrap with WYPR's Morning Edition news anchor Nathan Sterner sitting in for Tom. Nathan and his guests will be reviewing some of the week's top local and regional news. We hope you'll join them for the Friday News Wrap tomorrow right here on Midday. And a bit later in this hour, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will be stopping by with her review of the new musical at Baltimore Center Stage. If you're just joining us, it's the February edition of Midday at the Movies and our annual Oscars preview. And I'm talking in the studio here with Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Max Weiss, the editor-in-chief and film and pop culture critic at Baltimore Magazine. And you're welcome to be part of the conversation. If you've got some thoughts about the Oscar nominees or want to tell us about your favorite film experiences, give us a call. 410-662-8780. You can email us at midday@wypr.org, send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall, or you can comment on WYPR's Facebook page where we are live streaming the conversation today. I'm going to go to the phones. We've got a couple of callers. Mike in Hamden is on the line. Mike, go ahead.
Hi. Just real quickly about the nominees, my favorite film was First Reformed, and just got ignored. I was sorry about that. But what I really wanted to say was that for the first time, I've been in Baltimore over 20 years now, and this will be the first time I've ever been able to see all of the nominated foreign films. Wow. And a lot of that is because of the opening of the Parkway Theater.
Yeah. Oh,
so between the Parkway and the Charles, I'm going to get to see, well, within the next couple weeks, I'm going to get to see all five of those nominations.
Yeah.
And
With the Senator, it's a great theater environment in Baltimore. Mm-hmm.
Which is your favorite of the foreign films?
I'm an indie film guy, mm-hmm. you know, and the Charles and the Parkway are where I spend most of my time watching films.
Mike, you mentioned the five foreign film nominees. Which ones were your favorites?
Well, my favorite was Cold War, which I thought was a brilliant film,
Polish
and
film.
I think it shows how beautiful a film can be in black and white.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I found it a little cold, to be honest, no pun intended, but it is absolutely gorgeous, and it's cool to look at, you know? It's a cool film. It's definitely worth seeing. You can find my review at BaltimoreMagazine.com, but it's gorgeous, undeniably.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for the call. Okay. We'll go to Archie in Baltimore.
Hi, guys.
Hello, Archie. Thanks
how
for the call.
How are you?
Mm-hmm. Hi.
How you doing, Jeb?
Hey, how are you, Archie?
All right. Yes, Jeb and I go back, long-time volunteer with the Maryland Film Festival.
Mm-hmm. What's on your mind, Archie?
Oh, what's on my mind is Christian Bale's performance in Vice.
Mm-hmm.
I found it very compelling. He embodied Dick Cheney down to a fine science. I mean, you know, it wasn't like a caricature or a puppetry. You know, he had that true and honest cynicism, sinister, and
he was indeed
just, you know, he He got me.
And Archie's done some acting on his own. Archie, were the categories here in Best Picture or any of the acting categories which you thought something, just like Mike had thought, First Reformed was badly overlooked, which I happen to agree with.
Same.
Did anything like that that jumps out at you that you wished were on the nominee lists?
Well, out of the films that I've seen this year, I think Beale Street could have got
absolutely
a couple more nods. And
it was a Best Supporting Actress award.
Yeah, Regina King.
That's right.
You know, and it's the way stuff is going nowadays, you know, it's like, pick your award show.
Okay. Sure. Thanks for the call, Archie. Appreciate it. You know, speaking of snubs, we have a whole bunch of films that didn't get mentioned by the in the Oscar nominations. But I wanted to note that, I mean, the first thing that I was struck by was that this was the first time that Spike Lee is up for Best Director, and his film Black Klansman is in the Best Picture category. How significant is that for you?
It's a big deal. I mean, and I was shocked, actually. I thought there was no chance he hadn't been nominated before. And he's had this experience, you know, at Cannes, and, you know, where he's not gotten the kind of recognition. I mean, I think he's, you know, I think he's an uneven filmmaker. I think some of his films have been great. I think Black Klansman is one of the best things he's ever done. I think it's an amazing film. But he is a... From almost the moment he left NYU, maybe even before he left NYU, he's been an unbelievable force in the art form, and I don't think he's ever gotten the credit for it. And he's worked in documentary. I think one of the greatest films he ever made was about the four girls in Birmingham that he made with HBO. And I think it's just shocking to me that he had never been nominated. And I don't think he's going to win in this one, but it's long overdue that he's been nominated.
He could sneak in. I mean, I'm predicting Alfonso Cuarón for Best Director.
Yeah, I mean, based on everything that's happened,
right? But maybe that sort of sentimental vote for Spike Lee, because I think everybody's reaction to Spike, that this is Spike Lee's first nomination for Best Director. I mean, to me, he is on the sort of Mount Rushmore, you know, of great American directors. I would put him right up there with Scorsese, you know,
directors. But his influence on the whole art form has been so significant.
Right.
I mean, there are some very great directors who, that's what they do. They direct films and that's the end of it. You know, Woody Allen would be in that category.
Yeah.
Spike Lee has really influenced many young filmmakers. I mean, Ernest Dickerson, who's gone on to direct, was a cinematographer for him. You can go on and on with this sort of stuff. And that is part of what you get awarded for.
And one of the great all-time worst Oscar mistakes was when Do the Right Thing lost to Driving Miss Daisy. That was just a disaster. I mean, Do the Right Thing is a masterpiece. And then, you know, Black Klansman is an excellent film. I wouldn't quite say masterpiece, but it certainly is a worthy film. And if he won Best Director, I would be jumping up and down.
It so taps into the zeitgeist right now, too, of our concern about racism and the rise of the KKK. I mean, they're emerging from the shadows again, and I just thought it was, this film had a timeliness to it that was powerful. I do have a clip that I wanted to play from The Klansman. This is John David Washington as the undercover officer Ron Stallworth talking with Adam Driver, who's playing Flip Zimmerman, the Ron Stallworth stand-in in this undercover operation.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie hot dog white boy. That's what some light-skinned black folks do. They pass for white. Doesn't that hatred you've been hearing the Klan say, doesn't that piss you off?
Of course it does.
Then why are you acting like you ain't got skin in the game, brother?
Rookie, that's my fucking business.
It's our business. I'm going to get you your membership card so you can go to the cross burning and get in deeper with these guys.
That's a scene from the Black Klansman.
And that's Denzel Washington's son, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You can hear the rhythm in his voice. He sounds a bit like Papa.
Interesting. Black Panther is also up for Best Picture, and I think it's rare that a big sort of Marvel style comic book action picture gets Best Picture like this, and that's kind of a trend now.
Yeah, I think it's totally deserved. I mean, who made up that rule that a great big hit movie that's got wham bang special effects can't be Best Picture nomination? I mean.
Yeah,
it's a silly rule to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think it's so fascinating. So Ryan Coogler, the director of this, 3 years ago was at the Sundance Labs with a little script that nobody wanted to make called Fruitvale Station. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to do Creed, and he's now at the top of the game in terms of, you know, he can do any project I expect he wants to do. The cinematographer of this movie was Rachel Morrison, who was the first woman to be nominated as a cinematographer for Mudbound. She did a little film called Little Accidents that we had at the festival 5 or 6 years ago, worked in an independent film. So this film is a cultural shift film, not just because it's about the Black Panther and the Marvel thing with Ta-Nehisi, who helped with the comic books and all that sort of stuff, which is very important, but because it's also, you know, a whole group of artists have been now lifted or have lifted themselves into a whole part of the world.
Usually when an artist whose work I have admired, when they sign on to do a Marvel film, I'm like, oh no, like don't go that route, you know, because you're going to get sucked into the whole corporate Marvel machine. But I would say in this case, this film still has a personality.
Yeah.
It has Ryan Coogler's voice and identity. It feels filmic. I thought it was a very exciting film. I liked it a lot. So, and by the way, it just won the Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble, which is basically their version of Best Picture. So it's a contender. I wouldn't say it's a front runner, but it's in the conversation actual contender.
Yeah, we have a comment from Steven on Facebook Live. He says, Black Panther is average, not in top 10 superhero films of all time, in his humble opinion. Also, he asks, which animation film looks like the favorite for the Oscar? Anybody plugged into the animation?
Yeah. I think Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is going to win, actually, which is, you know, shocking.
Great things about that.
Because Pixar usually dominates in that category, and we have The Incredibles, too. We also have Wes Anderson, one of my favorite directors, Isle of Dogs, although I didn't think it was one of his best films. But Ralph Breaks the Internet and Murray. But I haven't seen the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, but people are geeking out over this film.
Yeah,
everybody
true.
Who sees it, I mean, it's really on my list. I want to see it. Everybody who sees it loves it so much, and they say it's the best Spider-Man film ever, which is wild because Lord knows there have been a lot of them. And people think that it really raises the art form both of animation and also of what a superhero movie can be.
And I think that I will tell you the Sony team, I think, sort of had their fingers crossed. I mean, they made the movie with full force and all that, but had no idea that it would do. It got very close to release before they started to get an inkling that this thing would have the kind of impact. And I think it's going to play forever.
Yeah.
I
mean, Lee on Facebook Live says, I love Pixar and Wes Anderson as much as the next person, but if Into the Spider-Verse doesn't take Best Animated Film, I'm going to burn my house down. Yeah. An amazing achievement.
There you go. You know, your listeners are like really smart. I have to say, I'm impressed.
Although I wouldn't burn your house down.
No,
right,
please.
Not that part. But like, honestly, like a moment ago, one of the listeners said that they thought the biggest snub was If Beale Street Could Talk. That is my biggest snub. That and a film I loved called Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Oh, yes.
The Melissa McCarthy film, which was one of my favorites of the year.
She got such buzz for the acting job she did.
Yes.
In that.
Yeah. And she's
phenomenal in that role.
Right. Yeah. And they also mentioned that they mentioned First Reformed, which is a brilliant film, which did get a nomination for Best Original Screenplay.
Yeah.
But I was livid that Ethan Hawke did not get nominated for Best Actor. I thought it was the best male performance of the year. And the idea that it didn't even get nominated kind of boils my blood. So I'm right there with your audience.
What about the lineup in the Best Actors and Best Actress categories? We've got the woman who is in Roma is Yalitza Aparicio.
Yeah. So you've got a woman who has never acted before, who Alfonso Cuarón, you know, found this long addition process and, you know, the archetypal discovery kind of story, who is magnificent in the movie. Yeah. She's up against Glenn Close, who's been nominated seven times, has never won.
Is the wife.
For the wife. And she's great in it. Mm-hmm. So this category, and Olivia Colman.
I love Olivia Colman.
Me too.
The Favorite,
amazing.
Which is a movie, is astonishing to me. This movie has done so well.
I love The Favorite one, and I love Olivia Colman in it. One thing is, those are three lead performances. I mean, they relegated Emma Stone and Rachel Wise to supporting, but the truth is, they are all three leads. So that's how they sort of chose to go with it. But
and Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born.
Who's amazing.
She's incredible.
She's everything you need her to be, because in that film, you need to feel like you're witnessing the birth of this mega star, something truly once in a generation. She's got that kind of talent. Her tender scenes with Bradley Cooper are amazing. So she's worthy too.
She sings pretty well too.
Yeah, I mean, so I've heard. And then Melissa McCarthy is actually my pick. I mean, she just disappeared into the role of, for Can You Ever Forgive Me, of this sort of misanthropic, kind of loner, cranky writer. Mm-hmm. And I think she is revelatory in that film, but she doesn't have a chance, unfortunately. I mean, Glenn Close, I'm pretty sure, is gonna win, right?
I think you'd have to bet on that, right?
And and how can you be upset about that? I mean, it's Glenn Close, and she is great in The Wife.
Yeah, she's terrific.
So,
Jonathan Pryce was also great.
I am actually a little disappointed he wasn't nominated, because
exactly.
I thought that he was her equal. Like, he matched her.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
And in the Best Actor category, who do you think is going to take it?
Well, it's certainly like it's a two-man race at this point between Christian Bale and Rami Malek. Rami Malek is hot off the heels of his Screen Actors Guild win for Bohemian Rhapsody.
And Globes and...
But Christian Bale also won the Globe,
right?
You know,
because oh, that's
they
true,
split the categories.
Split categories. Yeah,
I'm still going to lean a little towards Christian Bale because of some of the new controversy that has surfaced about Bohemian Rhapsody with Bryan Singer, the director, and there've been some, you know, assault. Accusations against him. And also Rami Malek, he's just not a big enough name yet, I think. And Christian Bale is a movie star, actor. So it's a very, very close. But if I have to give an edge, I would say Christian Bale.
And not Bradley Cooper, because he got snubbed for director?
Yeah, I don't think he's really in the conversation, although I think he's amazing in it. I think he deserves to be in the conversation, but I don't think he is.
Yeah.
And then the other nominees are Viggo Mortensen for Green Book. Thumbs down on that. And Willem Dafoe for At Eternity's
Willem
Gate.
Willem Dafoe is one of my favorites.
I thought he was too old to play the part, but then I was like, once I saw it, I was like, nope, he's exactly
And I'm
right.
also happy that Sam Elliott is getting Best Supporting, or he's nominated.
Nominated.
I love that actor. And there was a touching profile of him on television not too long ago.
He's the best darn Sam Elliott he can be.
He is good.
You should rent The Hero, which is this movie that puts him in the lead role that we had as a closing night film 2 years ago. And he is like a whole career.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly what you said. This guy is so good at doing those roles, and he then carries a whole movie, and it's breathtaking to see. It's wonderful.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up now.
Oh. Was that Sam Elliott?
That was my Sam Elliott.
Okay, just checking.
Max Weiss is the editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine and the periodical's film and pop culture critic. She also blogs at maxthegirl.com and shares her thoughts on Twitter and Instagram at maxthegirl. And she's a certified critic for Rotten Tomatoes. Let's not forget. We'll have links to her and also to Jed Dietz. He's the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, which runs the SNF Parkway, a historic film palace on North Avenue. We'll have links to both Jed and Max on our website at wypr.org/midday. Thanks to you both.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Rob.
Coming up after a short break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with her review of the new musical at Center Stage. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.